Hi there. Thank you for listening to Spotless, Breaking the Boundaries of Television. The world of TV and advertising is evolving quickly. The largest content creators, distributors, and brands are all vying for new ways to engage the next generation of viewers. Presented by two media powerhouses, Triple Lift and Advertising Week, Spotless brings you in-depth conversations with the leaders who are driving this evolution. Consumer behaviors of the next 2 years will decide the winners and losers of the next two decades. Take a listen to our premiere episode, recorded at Advertising Week 2020, where Spotless debuted with this exclusive conversation. Now here's our host, Michael Shields, GM of Advanced Advertising at Triple Lift.
Award-winning Noah Hawley is one of the most accomplished auteurs and versatile storytellers working in television, film, and literature. Hawley balances the art of telling cinematic, unforgettable, character-driven stories that linger long after you've been immersed in them. Over the course of his more than 20-year career, Hawley's work as a novelist, screenwriter, series creator, showrunner, and director has garnered acclaim, winning an Emmy, Golden Globe, Penn, Critics' Choice, and Peabody Award, and passionate responses from audiences. Upcoming from Hawley, he will write and direct the next Star Trek feature film for Paramount. Recent projects from Hawley include his feature film directorial debut, Lucy in the Sky, starring Natalie Portman, John Hamm, Dan Stevens, Zazie Beetz, Pearl Amanda Dickinson, Tig Notaro, and Ellen Burstyn. In addition, Fargo, This is a True Story, a companion book to the first three seasons of the series and authored by Hawley, was released by Grand Central Publishing. Also a best-selling author, Hawley has published five novels, A Conspiracy of Tall Men, Other People's Weddings, The Punch, The Good Father, and most recently, the bestseller Before the Fall. Hawley began his television career as a writer and producer on the hit series Bones in 2005, going on to create, executive produce, and serve as showrunner for ABC's My Generation and The Unusuals. More recently, under Hawley's 26 Keys production banner, in addition to the groundbreaking series Legion, Hawley serves as executive producer, writer, director, and showrunner on FX's award-winning anthology series Fargo, the fourth installment of Fargo, starring Chris Rock, with Hawley directing the first and second episodes, premiered on Sunday, September 27th. Noah, welcome to Spotless.
Thanks for having me.
Please get us started by telling us a little bit about your background and your path to becoming a creator.
Well, when I look back, I don't see any straight lines. You know, I started as a musician, which is a storyteller of kind. And, you know, I started writing fiction because I got tired of living in a van with three filthy, penniless men. And you know, writing is something that you can do by yourself. And when you've written 10 pages, you've written 10 pages. You have that. It's less ethereal. And so I moved from New York to San Francisco. I started writing fiction. I published my first book. And then my motto is, what else can I get away with? You know, I started doing some film and television writing. And then, you know, I just kept pushing on everything and continued to write books and television and film, and knock wood, it's all worked out.
No, I couldn't think of a better home for such rich stories as Fargo and Legion than FX Networks. Can you tell us a little bit about working with the executive team there, partnering on the development team of on these shows, and what makes that brand FX so strong?
Well, you know, they have a motto, which is fearless, and I would say that is true. It's not that we don't have a lot of discussions about the things that I want to do and that I don't have to, you know, continue to provide clarity. The thing with an artistic vision is the artist has it, and it's almost impossible to communicate with words what a visual vision is. And so we invariably end up in this place where I say, you're just going to have to trust me, and fearlessly they do.
You've, over the years, you've seized obviously upon some amazing source material with shows like Fargo and Legion, and then have really kind of stretched, enhanced, made these stories your own. I wonder if you might tell us a little bit about your process for engaging the source material and then how you kind of iterate on it to build something new out of those stories.
Yeah, it's interesting now, having done it a couple of times, you know, with Fargo and then Legion and now Star Trek. You know, what I try to think about originally is what the brand is. What does that story make the audience feel? Primarily, you know, what is it about the Coen Brothers movie, let's say, that makes it unique? You know, is it because it's obviously a combination of factors, but there's a journey that you go on in watching that film that ends with a certain feeling. And as long as we can deliver that series of feelings to the audience, we've created something that deserves the name Fargo. It's a very ethereal thing on some level, but that was the ask. The ask from FX was, can you create a television show called Fargo without Marge, by which they meant any of the characters? And if you're basing a show on a movie, but you're not using any of the characters of the story, what exactly are you doing? You know, I liken it to being asked to paint a picture from a photograph of a city, but not use any of the buildings that I actually see in the photo. So, you know, it comes down to, this is what the brand means to me. You know, this is what, in my mind, you know, Star Trek was a series about exploration. It was a series about humanity proving its worth, often through being smarter than the other guy. You know, it was a creative show. It was funny. It had imagination to it. Those are all qualities that I need to bring to it, even if I'm not literally doing anything that has ever been done before with Star Trek. So, you know, it does require me to really figure out as a viewer what my experience of the material is.
As a former Fox employee, who was my last employer before this job, and working very closely with John Landgraf and his team at FX, I've always been curious about how you took that iconic source material in Coen Brothers movie, and you said that FX gave you some direction on where they wanted you to take it. Could you give us some insights onto how that pitch went and how you approached that pitch with FX?
Yeah, well, I mean, part of it was me, I suppose, trying not to get the job, because they said, can you make a television show out of it? And I said, you really can't make a television show out of it. If what you mean by a television show is season one, season two, season three, because what made the movie so profound was its ending, was the fact that Marge had experienced this crazy Coen Brothers case and sort of seen the worst of humanity. But now she was going to bed and her husband got the 3-cent stamp and tomorrow is a normal day and that's her reward. This was the strangest thing she ever experienced. And if she woke up tomorrow and it was another crazy Coen Brothers case, not only couldn't you call it a true story, but it would begin to feel made up on a level that would distance the audience from it. But I said it could be an anthology, and luckily that first season of American Horror Story had premiered the year previously. And so they had some experience with that. You know, Ryan had kind of broken through. And, you know, so what I said is, why is the movie called Fargo? It's set in Minnesota, right? And if you don't know your geography, Fargo is in North Dakota. Except that the word Fargo is evocative of a place, you know, what Joel and Ethan Coen call Siberia with family restaurants, right? And now after the movie, it's also evocative of a kind of story, right? A true crime story that isn't true, where truth is stranger than fiction. And so if Fargo is really a state of mind that the audience is in while they're watching it, then you can tell this story and you can tell this story and you can tell that story. They don't have to be connected on any level, except that they put you in the right state of mind.
And how does that apply to now the significant evolution of the series that's that's going on in series four? How do you take that theme into series four?
Well, for me, it always starts with a situation. I don't necessarily know where the situation comes from. It pops into my head one day. The first year was two men meet in an emergency room, and one of them is a very civilized man, and the other is the opposite. Year two was a woman drives home with a man sticking out of her windshield and makes dinner for her husband. You know, and this time I just, you know, of course it's been 3 years or so since the last season was on the air. And I thought I was done. And then I thought, oh, there's these two crime families, for lack of a better phrase, and they trade their youngest sons to keep the peace. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. You know, and in my head, it was a period piece. It was what ended up being 1950. And then I thought, oh, okay, well, Fargo is sort of a meditation on America and the things people do for money, as Marge said, here you are, and for what, a little bit of money. You know, then let's look at America and what it means to be an American, you know, at a moment in time where neither of these two crime families were considered American in the classic insider way. The Italian immigrants and you know, the African Americans who had come up from the South, and these two groups had collided in Kansas City, and this was that story. And then I thought, well, what's interesting about that is that the trading of the sons allows us to tell a story about assimilation, becoming something you're not, in a more personal way. It's not an abstract idea. It's literally like, imagine your father trades you to another family and they have completely different customs than you do, and you have to find out how to make your way in that family.
Noah, this podcast, Spotless, is about the evolution of television that's going on right now. Obviously, the consumer changes around television over the last 10, 12 years or so, the advent of new streaming services, the acceleration of the adoption of streaming during this time of coronavirus, all has had a big impact on the industry. As a storyteller, I might, and with such a storied career, I wonder if you might tell us about some of the milestones in the evolution of like content creation and production or distribution that have had an impact on the way that you think about telling stories.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the years go by, and when I look back at my first show in 2008 or 2009, you know, which was for a broadcast network, at a moment where, I mean, I imagine FX was making The Shield or had just started making The Shield, you know, but there really wasn't, other than HBO, an outlet for what we now consider premium cable or you know, this elevated storytelling on television. And, you know, I look at the ratings that I got on the two shows that I did, which now would be considered epic numbers. And, you know, everything is relative. Certainly the last 5 years, let's say, has seen an explosion of networks or streamers, and they're all competing for eyeballs, and the only way that they can get those eyeballs is to put shows on their air that are different or better, right? And as an artist, I think, oh, I can do that. I can do different and better, right? So you've seen a huge surge in the artistry of television, as well as, you know, an explosion in the sort of cinematic nature of television and the scale of television. Obviously, Game of Thrones costs more than any Marvel movie when you really break down minute by minute. You know, but even on a basic level, just the bar for excellence is really achievable anymore. But what's interesting is, of course, is that leads to a certain consolidation, right, among the corporations. So you saw this explosion, and you have all these different purveyors of television, and then they start to conglomerate. And we end up at a peak with 500 plus shows on the air. And there's going to be a contraction. There has to be a contraction at a certain point in the business. Once Disney has acquired its empire, once whatever happens on, you know, does Apple buy Paramount or Sony, or, you know, something's going to happen that's really going to give you four or five major players. And then the money that they're spending has to drop, because at a certain point, there are only so many eyeballs and people have chosen. They're like, I'm going to subscribe to Netflix and I'm going to subscribe to Amazon and maybe Disney Plus, and that's it. You know, then the number of things will drop. And what's been interesting about this moment we're in now with coronavirus is that that moment, rather than happening over a period of years, is going to happen overnight, because the expense and the logistical difficulty of making anything for the next year or so is really going to force all these companies to go, do we really want to make this? Do we really need to make this? And so as a result, you're going to see, you'll never see 500 shows again, I don't think. You know, you might go from 500 one year to 200 the next year. And so what happens to all those writers and directors and actors, you know, who have been scaled up and now don't have as many jobs?
With the increasing cost of creating content that has grown significantly over the years, right, as you call out new entrants to the marketplace, the eventual consolidation of that marketplace, one of the things we're tracking on this podcast, of course, are the entrance of new SVOD services, but also new AVOD services. That being said, what role as a creator do you think that advertising should play in the development of content?
Well, I mean, I feel like, you know, what was, as a creator, you know, to get what advertising did, obviously, in the early days of television was create television, right? I mean, originally, television was a way to deliver ads to an audience built around shows that they had to make up to sell, you know, the soap operas. You know, what it did dramatically, I'm thinking of my broadcast days, was it created this sort of artificial, these four or five artificial, what they call commercial breaks, act breaks, in any story in which suddenly you have to go to commercial, and they always wanted to do it in the most dramatic way possible. And that's why you're always finding another body, or finding out that she's sleeping with her cousin, or there's all these artificial drama points in the story. And one of the great things about moving to FX was, you know, starting with the pilot script for Fargo, I never wrote an act break again. I just figured, we'll get in the editing room, we'll see where the commercials want to go. I don't believe that if the last thing someone saw wasn't the most dramatic thing, they're going to turn the channel. They're either invested in the story or they're not. And so, you know, on some level, I think, you know, the modern marketplace has shifted creative content away from having to be artificial on any level. And as a result, you know, the products that get sold during our shows, there's a more integrated feeling to all of it.
It's interesting in particular with Fargo, because fans of the show, I've certainly noticed that Fargo's key art tends to have logos integrated on the bottles and cans and consumer packaging. It suggests almost a connection between brands and content, and that brands are vital to some aspect of storytelling. What is kind of the ideal relationship between advertisers and brands and storytellers? Do you use them for authenticity? Do you ignore them? Do you reinvent them?
No, you do. And the integration of products, you know, is very important. You know, with Fargo specifically, because the story is always set at some moment in the past, even if it's just a couple of years ago, the idea being, because I'm saying it's a true story, we have to be far enough away from the events that the book would have been written, the actual truth would have come out, right? So what I end up with is a situation where I can never offer advertisers like sell tomorrow's car today, you know, like it's always like sell yesterday's car today. And that's not as attractive on some level. But, you know, I do find to your point, you know, there is something. We had a whole storyline built in season two around the electric typewriter, you know, as the plot point, like this was the future, the electric typewriter. And that there was something, you know, in that Mad Men carousel kind of way about it. Of course, the joke being that it's 1979 and we're about to have the personal computer and that's going to go the way of the dodo. But I don't know, there is something to the American experience of brands and relationship to brands and products that if you have to use fake products, immediately the show doesn't feel real to anybody. Do you know what I mean? And so there is something to the authenticity of the American experience where you want people to be eating Cheerios and using the name brand syrup and, you know, all those things that really make it authentic.
Noah, switching gears a bit, as part of our commitment to raising awareness on issues of social justice, which is a commitment that we've made on this show, we're asking all of our guests to comment with their own views on a lot that's happened in 2020, on what we can do to ensure advocacy for social justice is kept fresh and loud, what your own experience of this year has been and what your own thoughts have been about it, how it's impacted thoughts on the stories that you want to tell. That being said, as a writer, how do you like kind of balance telling your story and your responses to these things to telling the stories that viewers are interested in, say they want, particularly these kinds of topics?
Yeah, I mean, my approach has always been you have to entertain first. And then if you do that, the audience gives you permission to do more with character, more with theme, et cetera. You know, and I think with Bargo, I've created a show where if all you want is to see what's going to happen next, like the show is there for you, you know, the twist, it's unexpected, et cetera. But if you want more, if you want to think more deeply about the characters and the issues that we're exploring, we're there for you as well. I like to make what I call the second view show, where it's like you want to watch it the first time to see what happens. And then when you know what happens, you want to go back and see how it was built. You know, obviously this year we're dealing a lot with race and immigration and what it means to be an American. And this is a story that was, you know, thought up and created 18 months ago, let's say, and written over, you know, a 6-month period. And all I can really say is it's a long overdue conversation. So, but it's also a conversation we've been having for the last 400 years on some level. So there wouldn't have been a moment where the show came out where it wouldn't have been relevant, but it happens to be more at the forefront of our culture at this moment, which I think is good. And all I ever want to do as an artist is to join the conversation. I'm not trying to, it's not a polemic. I'm not trying to preach to anyone. I'm just saying, well, let's think about this and fiction allows us to think about history and to think about issues in a way that is more of a parable or an allegory on some level, you know, and if you think about the fact that people's minds don't change from facts, they change from stories. They're inspired by stories. They empathize with characters. You find yourself watching someone who's not like you at all, and you find yourself empathizing with them, and that's how people's minds change.
Storytellers have a role to play, certainly. Thank you for that, Noah. As everyone knows, the fourth installment debuted just last week, so we're dying to know the question, what can we expect in this upcoming season, season 4 of Fargo?
It's an epic. You can expect scale and size. You can expect a lot of Chris Rock and Jason Schwartzman and the great Ben Whishaw and Jesse Buckley. You know, you can expect a story in which you're not going to know what happens next. And I think that's exciting. You know, the stakes are high. It's a crime story. There are going to be bodies. And yet, I think the suspense is genuine and unexpected. So you know, and every once in a while, it might be a little bit funny.
We're excited and we'll all be watching. Noah, thank you so much for joining us on Spotless. It was a true pleasure to have you.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Spotless. Be sure to subscribe and come back soon for another conversation about the future of television. For more information, you can connect with us anytime at spotless@triplelift.com.